and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 142, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man who, if he was in Gladiators, his name would probably be Beetroot. It's Tony Esmond.
Oh, that was a great moment, the Beetroot story, wasn't it?
Yes. And Dan, you have to hear that. Well, no, we can't say that on air, can we? Yes. Hello, folks. It's just us three this week. No guests.
Yeah.
No seatbelts. God knows what it's going to be. Yeah, we're going to be doing a bit of comic talk this week. We've got a couple of things we've had on the emails and a couple of books we've had stored up for a little bit.
Yeah, so, doing a bit of a review show, aren't we?
Yeah.
That's the plan, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we're getting reviewers' guilt. They're beginning to pile up.
Yeah. And we do get reviewers' guilt because there is stuff that we have in our to-read piles or stuff that we've read but we never get around to talking about because it naturally happens.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We become like hoarders that you can't see the mess anymore.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much comics.
Yeah. And I don't know about you guys. Sometimes I have a book that I'm really excited about reading, but I'm just trying to find the time to get, you know, I never get around to reading some of these titles. Do you find that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, mate. My to-read pile is fucking bound. It's almost illegal. I'd put it that way.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd be surprised if I don't get nicked when I, you know, someone finds out, well, you haven't read that lot, that pile there.
Yeah.
There's a couple of ones where I've got, like, they're like themed ones, so I'm waiting for guests that are coming up.
Okay.
It's like say a cyberpunk guest, and it's like, oh, I've got this cyberpunk comic I haven't reviewed. This would be a good one.
Yeah.
So a few like that.
Yeah.
You're so organised, Dan. Bloody hell. Putting us to shame.
Right. It sounds a lot more organised than it actually is.
One of the dangers with me, I find, is the old Amazon wish list. Because occasionally...
Yeah. Why haven't you used that? You use that quite a lot, don't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, because I can't buy all the books. So,
I sometimes
just put there... It's just used as a shopping list. I don't necessarily buy them all from Amazon, but it's just so I don't forget, oh, yeah, there's that, you know, there's that book. It's always sort of on my mind. But occasionally I like to sort of pop in and maybe treat myself to a book now and then. And when I do that, when the book arrives, my natural instinct is to just devour it immediately, which sometimes means I don't get a chance to read some of the other stuff that I've been planning to read. So it's a dangerous game. But that's kind of, you know, it's a bad...
Can we count amongst that the Big Daddy annual that I gave you yesterday?
Oh, yeah. God. I've read that three times already. Now,
I'll take my hat off to whoever can make a content of the whole annual on Big Daddy.
I think it was 3 years running he had annuals out.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He was huge in the 80s. For those who don't know, Big Daddy was a wrestler on English television. And he was...
Yeah. Him and Giant Haystacks, that was a big grudge match, wasn't it?
Yeah. They were the Hulk Hogan and Macho Man of the UK, which
fucking hell.
And any similarities are purely coincidental between a character in Cockney Kung Fu and Giant Haystacks. I'd like to add that point in.
Yeah. Very true. Very well done, Tony. Well done.
Thank you.
He used to like special moves like the belly slap, belly thrust.
He just used to bounce people off his belly, didn't he? That was his thing.
That was kind of it.
I think Steve Sims was telling me yesterday, he was the brother of the bloke who organised the TV deal or something.
Really?
Oh, okay.
I think it was Steve told me that. Yeah, I think so.
That's true.
Yeah.
Do you know where you can get a really fantastic deal?
Is it in a pound shop in Swindon?
It could be. But no, I think it's a fantastic deal. It's signing up to Comic House. Yes, our sponsors, as always, are the Marvelous Comic House, where if you like independent comics, and if you listen to this show, you probably do, and you can't necessarily make it a convention, or maybe your local comic book shop just sucks when it comes to getting small press and independent comics, then you definitely want to go to comichouse.com, because they've got all kinds of stuff on there. On the site itself, there's a huge database where creators can go and they list their books, and you can buy hard copies. What's on there at the moment, Dan? Have you seen what's on there at the moment?
Yes, I've got the email ready.
Oh.
Ready to go. So added this week, you've got Terminal Hero, Punchline, issue 1, Uncanny, Future Quake, issue 11.
Oh, I used to be in some of them.
The Big Sheep, A Farm Noir. I've not checked that one out. That looks good. Fox Bunny Funny.
I just totally got that.
Well the done big, on saying that, by the way.
The Big Sheep, which is like The Big Sleep. Oh, amazing.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
What was the one you said after that?
Fox Bunny Funny.
Yeah, well done on saying that again. Nice one, almost right there. And,
City of Lost Souls. That should be a good one. James McCulloch again. And at the end, they stuck on Vanguard as well. So that's not new, but it's still great.
You don't just stick on Vanguard. You don't stick on Vanguard. Vanguard's stick always there. Yeah.
A little bit of nepotism there, but I'll give it a shout when I return.
If you like the sound of all that stuff, then you definitely need to sign up to the Comic House app, which is available now. It essentially works like Netflix. You pay like a £3 a month subscription, which is basically the price of like one digital book these days from some of the bigger publishers, and you get access to all of the comics on their database. So that's some amazing indie titles that we've seen on there. And
there's a load more Dynamite they put on there.
Yeah, they got Dynamite. There's an influx of Dynamite titles. So like Army, if you like Army of Darkness. And that's what
Umbrella,
stuff.
I think, isn't it, as well on there? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, then you can read them.
I like Dynamite books.
Yeah, the price of a subscription. So, and plus there's a 14-day free trial. So, you know.
Sexy.
Yeah. What's your excuse for not doing it? I know. There's a few of our listeners who checked it out. And for creators themselves, it's actually, for creators themselves, it's also worth getting your books on there, I would say.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I've come across a couple of people and they said, oh, I've not heard of this. And it's like, fuck's sake, we go on about it all the time.
Yeah,
but, you don't listen to the show. You're dead to me. That's what I'd say to them.
Yeah.
I said, look, I'm not going over this again, Mum, and I hung up. But yeah, small press creators need to kind of get their shit on there, I think.
Yeah.
You know, get it out of there.
Yeah. Because, now that the payment model has sort of started as well, which is always something that creators wonder about, but it's all based on, like, ad revenue, you know, because there are ads and stuff. So the more people that click on your books and the more people that read them, and the more people that sign up to do that, then the more that everyone makes, because it's all going into a pot, and like it's like everyone's doing well for themselves, and they just started paying out. So
first lot of money came out last week, didn't it? That's good.
Yep. And unlike, for instance, on Comixology, you have to make a certain amount of dollars before you can get your cheddar, which I haven't made. Yeah. So on Comic House, I've already made more money than I did on Comixology.
When I got my money, I got $100 from Amazon Comixology last year, and they send over like an American check, and I had to go to the branch that my bank, the home branch, my bank I was associated with, to pay it in there.
Oh, really?
Over the counter. It's like, fucking hell.
Well, how many people just don't bother?
Probably. What did you buy with that money, Dan? Was it a ranch? You look like a man who owns a ranch.
Got a Vegas.
That's because it got eaten up by the household. You know, it goes.
No.
Whores.
So nothing exciting.
Yeah.
How much is a whore these days? I don't know. Is it expensive?
I don't know. God knows. It's long gone are the days when I had money to pay for them.
If you're a listener and you know how much whores are, please write in.
Yeah, send your emails to. No.
Or if you are in fact a listener and a whore, that would be nice. I'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, but whoever you are, sign up to comichouse.com.
Yes. So smooth.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank Pulled you to Comic House for sponsoring the show.
Yeah. If we planned it.
Yeah. Which we didn't. I promise you we didn't.
Let's do the whore one this week. Yeah, we didn't do that.
No. Yeah. That's going to be a genre, is it, for one of them? I was thinking about that this weekend, actually. I think later on in the year, we should do another month of sort of genre shows. They were quite popular last time, I think. So
I said another sex show. Come on, the listeners want it.
Hang on. Are you talking about the podcast? You're talking about something completely different. Yeah. Now?
Something in your front room.
Yeah. I was just speaking to someone outside the room. There,
he's just like, "I've got my Comixology check. Yes, make it rain."
Yeah, get on Skype.
It's funny because I put a Patreon post up with oh, this one's a bit raunchy, and I instantly got a subscriber. So it's like, some more of them are coming up.
Well, there's got to be words in there. I was chatting to a guy in Orbital this week who does their Frame to Frame podcast, Paul, and I said, look, put hashtag competition, and you'll get a few more listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tried that years ago, doing one on Vanguard, trying to, someone to retweet, and I was like, I'll pick out one on the competition. And there's just tons of accounts where all they do is retweet things for competitions. And I was like, I'm fucked if I'm going to give any of them to this lot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I didn't.
Oh, good. Well done, you.
But if I'm going to give a comic away, it's going to be to someone who gives a shit, not just...
Yeah, like a hobo or something. Yeah.
I just got this mental image of Dan just passing out comics to the homeless.
Yeah, them setting fire to them saying, this will keep me warm.
Oh, God, this got dark.
Yeah.
But anyway, on with the show. And before we start talking about some comics, we've actually we've been out and about and doing some things.
Been out, yeah. In public again.
Yeah.
One of my best moments of the week was banging on the door while you were doing a sit down wee, and then taking a picture of you. You left the toilet.
Oh, Jesus Christ! Why is that the first thing you mention about this whole day?
You got a cheer. You literally got a cheer as you came out the toilet.
I've never
again.
Had such a big round of applause.
Apart from the one you give yourself in the toilet, do a little toilet.
Yeah. Whenever I leave any toilet, I go, yay!
Literally, you went to the loo and everyone's like, Vince is in the loo. Everyone stand round. Wait for him to come out.
Fucking hell.
The battery on my phone almost ran out. I was standing there with my camera on for so long, waiting for you to come out.
Shut up. But no, we need to put some context into this. We didn't just hang around near a toilet for the day.
It's not our usual Saturday.
Yeah.
That's on Wednesdays. But no, we were at the incredible comic shop in Swindon this weekend for the little small press event that was on there.
Yeah.
And
organised by Sarah Harris.
Indeed.
In conjunction with the two owners, Troy and Jonathan.
Yeah. She's a legend. And,
yeah, she is.
Yeah.
She did really well, didn't she?
Yes, brilliantly
so. Cookies. Yep. There's a separate story about them shortly as well.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah. Do you remember what I said I did to the cookies?
Yeah. Oh.
You didn't have too many, did you?
No. Oh, no. Basically, they're... I can't believe this is the first story I'm going to tell. Now, when you get there, not only do you've got a table you set up. Sarah's a brilliant host. She makes sure everyone's got water. She's got lunch for people, and she also baked cookies for everyone. Yeah, there was plates and plates of cookies, like homemade cookies. She even made vegan cookies, which were these bigger looking cookies.
Yeah,
and Tony's you tell Tony.
I said they're a bit flatter because I sat on those ones, accidentally.
And two of them did look like one, his left cheek was on, and the right cheek. The other.
They tasted lovely. And then I said, "What about the one in the middle?" Which then one of the biscuits got called the Gooch cookie.
Oh. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. And I think Chris Gander was literally laughing so much he was crying. It was making me laugh so much.
Yeah. No one ate that one, I presume.
Oh, no, it was nice. They were great cookies, to be fair. They almost all went, didn't they?
They were absolutely
about
fantastic.
Five plates full of them. Yeah.
They were fantastic. I wish I'd
they were right
some
next
home.
To us, weren't they?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, which is dangerous in itself. But anyway, the event... basically, the Incredible Comics shop. They've got some tables at the back of the store. It's a great store in itself.
Yeah, it's good. Really worth it.
Yeah,
great back issues. Yeah, and everything. Yeah,
yeah, and nicely spaced out. You know, you've got your figures. You know, if Funko's your thing, they're as soon as you enter. There's T-shirts. There's all kinds. It's a great shop. Actually, if you're in the area, if that was my local comic shop, I'd be
well pleased. Yeah, if I lived in Swindon, I'd be pleased. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But on this day, Sarah set it up, so there was some small press creators. We managed to wriggle ourselves into another day of it, because Sarah's got the right idea of like mixing up the lineup for every time she does
it. Well, to be fair, it was Red Mask last year, wasn't it? And then, because I was just visiting last year, I was like a punter last year.
Yeah.
So this year we did it under the Awesome Comics Pod banner.
Yeah, yeah.
So we kind of get away with it, don't we?
Yeah. Next time we'll go just as visitors and cause chaos. But we had some great creators there. Do you want to read the lineup, Tony?
Yeah, so there was us. Next to us was Claire Spiller and Jess Leslau from Wine and Zine, who were great company, weren't they? And they, I think they were doing sketches all day long, weren't they?
Yes. Nice. Yeah.
They sold out. They sold out books.
Yeah.
Which is really good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really great. Good. Yeah, how good is that? Then next to them was Davey Leach, who's a... What's the book he does again?
Psychogram.
Psychogram, that's it. Yeah, Davey Leach. And the other side of us was Steve Sims with Battle Badgers. And then next to him, there was a sort of table that Susie Gander was running, but it was for Little Heroes.
Yeah.
So they were selling. I signed a few Little Heroes books, actually. A lot of kids brought their comics up and said, oh, can you sign it, sort of thing. And I was writing things in them. Let's go fight tigers and stuff like that.
I had
nice.
One moment when someone came up to get Tony to sign the comic. Said, oh, yeah, bought your comic. I want you to sign it. My first thought was, he hasn't picked up Awesome Comics number one, has he? Jesus Christ. I'll never turn down a sale, but it's not for kids.
No.
Yeah, it's nice. I got a few photographs back on Twitter of kids who'd read it and enjoyed it. That's nice, isn't it?
Do you know it's really nice.
Soft side of me showing. And then Susie and Chris Gander were running that in the Periwinkle table as well.
Yeah.
And it was a really funny day. It was literally at one point we were laughing so much. People, we thought it was described at like the end of Thundercats.
Yeah, we had a Thundercats moment. Everyone laughed. Yeah, it was so good. One of the fantastic moments that I loved about it, Susie, obviously with the Little Heroes, had kids come up and talk about it, and there's one girl, she was quite excited about like the character she created for it, and Susie actually sketched this girl's character for her.
That's good, isn't it? Yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah,
some boy came up and he said, oh, can you sign it? What's your name? Well, my name's Tyler. I said, let's go fight tigers, Tyler. And I wrote that in the comic. And he's like, this is brilliant. You know, really nice. Really nice
That's
day.
Awesome.
Real sort of family event. Other punters, there's a few people come and saw us, actually, friends of ours. Yeah. John Ottaway, he came down. John's a good egg. I know John through, we're both beta readers for Pat Mills' books. And we've sort of met a few times at Pat events. He stayed for most of the day. He was a great company.
Yeah.
Andy CT and Greg Mason came down, who we just were screaming, literally screaming with laughter over an incident I had over beetroot once. It was laugh. And Stu Moraine and Andy Hanks came down, who are friends from True Believers, and they were great company as well. Yeah. But it was noticeable for a lot of people we didn't know buying comics that we it seems to be sometimes you go to conventions, it's the same old faces mostly walking around buying the same old comics off each other. This one was like a lot of people who you probably have never been to, like Leamington or True Believers or Sice or MCM or anything like that, but just go to a comic shop on a Saturday. A lot of families wandering around. It's nice. Yeah, really nice. That's atmosphere. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was really good. Good fun. There's obviously pictures on our sort of Twitter and Instagram if you want to see everyone looking happy and gurning.
And so. Someone might, there is a chance that someone might have fallen asleep, but we're not saying who.
Yeah. There's some off the record stories that we could tell.
You have to tell us about them when on meet face to face.
Yeah.
We've got a few to tell you.
But seriously, it's an example. I mean, we're talking more and more about how these sort of events, for me, are almost the way forward for a lot of independent creators, I think, to just get their work out there, you know. And it's a great example of getting new readers, people that wouldn't necessarily check your work out, and having proper sort of interaction almost away from a convention, so you don't have the pressure of, because with conventions sometimes, if it's a really busy convention, you kind of want to, in your mind, you kind of want to keep selling, do you know what I mean?
There is that.
But when you have these more relaxed events, you end up normally selling better, and you get
It's weird, isn't it?
Better interaction with people. But when it comes to these events, go in there just to have a good time and to get your books in front of people. Don't go in there thinking you're going to sell out of everything, because these are comic book shop events. These aren't, we're not talking MCMs, you know. And I think if you're realistic and you go in and just have a good time, you will have the best day like we did. And we got some new readers to our comic, which is good.
Yeah, and some more listeners. We're handing out postcards and stuff like that as well, weren't we? And some people came to talk about comics they were making, and that was nice. And then we all went off. We all sort of five or six of us trekked through Swindon for a bit of a last-minute bite to eat at the end of the day, weren't there, before we drove home and were knackered. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
And that's the worst Weatherspoons I've ever been to, but it was a good otherwise.
And just before I left, Tony gifted me with some of the annuals he picked up recently, one of which was the Big Daddy annual. I just wanted to make sure there was actually context to what we were talking about.
Yeah, that Tony was giving you an unsolicited annual for Big Daddy.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to reading those.
Your little pile's waiting for you, Dan, for Leamington. So nice. Little,
Hopefully, see the giant haystacks annual in there.
There is a spare one, my friend. There's a spare one ready for you. Yep.
Oh my god. Yes.
We also you got some audio with Sarah Harris.
We did.
We did indeed. We finally
talked her into it. Yeah, I think she said on Twitter today.
Talked her in / broke her down into giving us a bit of interview. Just be prepared. I'm eating a sandwich. So just bear that in mind when you hear this bit of audio.
Cramming down an egg mayonnaise sandwich.
Not egg mayonnaise. Oh, no. Never egg mayonnaise, Dan. Never.
Did you get the hump that you didn't get the right sandwich, though? You did go a bit deep.
No, I
didn't.
I got a chicken triple.
Oh, nice.
But I couldn't manage the triple, Dan.
You left it on the floor.
I didn't leave it on the floor. I gave it to a homeless man who was reading Vanguard.
Set fire to him.
No, but here you are. You can finally get here, but from our good friend Sarah Harris, who put on this great event. So yeah, let's just put the audio in here now, shall we?
I'm here with Vince.
What? I told you, don't do this when I'm in.
And it was the Incredible Comic Shop. I'm here with the organiser. The what did you tell me not to call you earlier? The Grand Dame of Comics. What are you, the Sarah Harris? Hello, Sarah.
Hey. Hello. Hey. Hello.
How long have we been trying to get you on?
I don't know, how long have you been going? 2 years?
Two and a half? I reckon about two and a half, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
You break everyone eventually.
So this is the second year of the event. Vince is still eating his sandwich. See, how did you choose people to come along?
This time or last time?
Either time.
I suppose it's the same. I try and get like a sort of a varied mix of people who do different types of stuff. But the main thing is I'm really rubbish at what she's doing. So I try and choose people who are fairly personable, so they're not going to scare all the customers away. And fairly personable.
Get that kid out of here. Who's that?
And who've got a nice mix of stuff. That's pretty much the plan. And anybody who's prepared to come to Swindon, which is a small
That is
pool.
True. Yeah, it is true. Yeah, I've got some funny looks coming through. Was it because I had matching socks, you said? Is that right?
Yeah, that's unusual around here.
So it's now a yearly event. You can do it again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I don't know when again, but yes.
That's good, yeah. So we've already sold quite a few things. It's been good.
Good.
I think we've sold more in the first half hour of this than we have in some conventions.
I think the nice thing about having it here is you get a lot of people coming through who've just come in to get their comics or whatever and aren't the sort of people who go to Comic Cons. Okay. I was talking to Troy earlier, who owns the shop, and he said, yeah, a lot of people read novels, but they don't think to go to book conventions. And in the same way, you've got a lot of people who read comics who don't think that comic conventions are necessarily for them. Whereas here, they're kind of a bit of a captive audience because I grab them at the front of the shop and make them come up here and buy stuff.
Okay. I mean, you're right, though, because I mean, the amount of people I speak to now think Comic Cons are for dressing up and E.T.'s finger, but they don't.
And also, they might just not think that they're that into comics. Like I say, with the books, I read a lot of books, but I don't think to go to sci-fi book conventions, even though I like sci-fi books. Some people might just think, oh, yeah, I like comics, but I'm not into it enough that I want to spend a whole day going to a thing that's all about them.
It's like film festivals and everything, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, so what's the. So you have recently dipped your toe in the art world, haven't you?
I've done a cover.
What did you cover for?
Sliced Quarterly.
Yeah, and very nice it was.
I'm a published artiste.
Yeah. That's good. And so you do have like a small press section here, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, we've got.
How does that work?
We've got two whole shelves. I buy stuff and put it on the shelves and hope that other people will then buy it again because then I get my money back. So that's pretty much how it works. So basically the shop now, as you can't see because this is audio, but it's big. Whereas it's a big shop. They used to have a really tiny shop. So when they moved into the big shop, I said to them, you've got all this shelf space that you can't fill. can I please have a couple of shelves to put small press on, because I wanted to see if Swindonians would buy it, and they do, which is great.
Brilliant. No, he's really good, mate. Yeah. Thanks for encouraging people to buy small press.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Bullying people. Yeah. It's more like it. Yeah.
Good. Thank you very much, Sarah.
That's okay. Bye.
So there you go. Thank you very much, Sarah, for talking to us finally on the record.
Yes.
And for anyone who was wondering, I really enjoyed that sandwich I was eating.
Which one didn't you eat?
I think it was the... I can't believe this is a topic of conversation. Yeah. I think it was just a straight-up chicken salad.
Ah, fair enough.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Because if you discarded the tikka, I'd have been... I don't know if we'd be able to carry on with the show.
Is that where you draw the line, Dan?
That's actually outrageous.
Never mind my story about doing a poo after eating beetroot. It's the what sandwich you didn't eat.
For anyone who just wants a laugh, just sort of send Tony gifts of beetroot. It'll just make us laugh. Oh dear. But anyway, yeah, cracking day. Certainly
hopefully another one next year.
And certainly you know, if you're aware of any of these little events taking place, send us an email and we'll give a shout out, because like I say, these are great events to sort of go to.
I don't know why every comic shop doesn't do it, actually.
Makes sense.
I heard back that they did better from sales because of the sort of footfall and all that sort of thing.
I tell you what also was this weekend was the old Medway Comic Con.
Oh, was that this weekend?
Dean Beattie went to that. So I think
it's fairly low to him, though, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, see how he got on there.
That's an autograph shit fest, though, isn't it?
I don't know. I've never been to that one. I know there was a few of those characters there. What's one of the fucking Sylvester McCoy?
Oh, was he there? What a surprise.
Yeah, he was there.
Don't like the Sylvie Mac. Hmm.
No, I'm not hating on him, but you know, he's kind of one of that lot of kind of just turning up for a few quid.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't he? Yeah, he's gone that way, hasn't he?
Yeah. To be fair, that's what I do every day.
Yeah, turn up at my work for a few quid. That's.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I would like to say that I don't have to just sit behind a desk blaring it to people, but then again, I kind of do, don't I? Yeah.
Anyway, back to the show. We're going to talk about a few books. We got a couple lined up.
Yeah.
There's not so much going to be a recommendation section at the end of the show, because we're just going to do that now. You know, we don't care. Yeah. What are rules? They're just something to just throw
out. I don't
around.
Know.
No, just from the wrong side of the tracks, aren't we?
Yeah. Reading about comics on a podcast on a Sunday night.
Yeah, we're fucking gangsters.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't
FTW.
Get... Yeah, you know it. Yeah, no one messes with us, or we'll pop a cap in your asses.
Oh, we'll fuck that shit up, FDS.
Yeah, I'll tweet something about you on Twitter. I won't tag you in, obviously. But...
Yeah, with a sick burn crew. Yeah. That makes us sound like we need ointment. Anyway.
You killed someone once, didn't you, Vince?
Yes, and I will do it again, but let's not talk about it now. for now, we're going to talk about some comics. So, who wants to go first?
Shall I go first? Because I know that at least one of you has read this. What I'm going to do.
Yeah, okay. Go for it.
Okay. So, I'm doing Radio On, Broadcast 4.
It's
been a while since we've talked about Small Press Anthology. I'm going to say, is it? None are sort of jumping out at me. I mean, I know we mentioned Sliced recently, but we didn't do a full-on review.
No, I don't think we've had one of the recommends for a little bit. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Let us know if we are.
Yeah. I might have got mine like a sieve, mate. So
I'll just grab my copy, actually. Yeah, carry on.
Oh, well, I've got these downstairs. I haven't had a chance to read them yet. I've got these sent through, didn't they? They look fucking fantastic.
Yeah, nice little design package as well. I'll read the foreword. In the pages, this is by Rob Carter, who's the editor. In the pages that follow, you'll explore how a song, an album, a band, or even music as a whole can change the way we think about things. How what we hear can inspire creativity, spark a good mood, or even fuel an obsession. You'll also discover the fate of soul singer Sam Cooke and find out about how a certain Labour leader lets loose. And it's basically a book of short stories. I'm not going to go into them all. I've just picked out a few that I liked.
Yeah.
So the first one I'm going to talk about is Caring is Creepy, and it's by Kit Palmer. If you want to know more about Kit Palmer, kitdraws.com, K-I-T, drawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdrawsdraws
favourites. This is great.
Oh, yeah. It's got a sort of one of those sort of quirky, cartoony, slice of life kind of coloured artwork. And it starts off by two friends are going to see a band, as one of them has split up with their ace, which in the bottom corner describes as arsehole cheating ex. And so they go to this gig, and what you get, I mean, I've been to a gig for a few months, but I was a big like weekly gig goer many years ago, maybe in my 30s, you know, and I saw an awful lot of bands, and there is that gig etiquette, isn't there, when you go along. It's cool not to dance, it's cool to stand at the back and nod your head, and they go through a bit of that, and one of them is, do you wear a t-shirt of the band at their own show? That's one, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, one looks at you, and unless you bought it there, I think that's acceptable. Do you buy their CD there? You know, that sort of thing. What are you going to say, Dan?
Would you be looked down on if you wore a t-shirt of a...
I think if you're part of the cool crowd, unless you bought it there, do you know what I mean? It's not as if you're going to see One Direction and wearing a t-shirt on the tube on the way to a One Direction gig, is it? You know, if you're going to see a sort of cool band, indie band or something, do you wear it? I think it's just these little questions he poses. And they were saying that you have each of the two girls who are attending these gigs, they have their own rules about if they like a band. And the sort of more sort of sensible, squarer of the two, her rules are they interesting and or are they the same old garbage? Are they reliable with a good solid album or a couple of EPs? And are they legit or are they a manufactured band? Yeah. And her wilder friend, her rules were, are they awesome? Were they hot? Do you want to see them again?
Yeah.
And it was the sort of the interplay between these two friends who are at this gig. And they basically sort of have a great time, see some music. It's sort of funny. It's certainly sort of idiosyncratic. It's got that sort of cartoony art to it. It's just a bit of a fun strip. I really liked it. You know, I just thought it's not up its own arse.
Yeah. And this book, before every strip, they've got like little pictures of like the creators and where you can find their work and stuff, which I think is great. Now, apparently, this Carrion's Creeper uses characters from his new project, Liminal. So that's and because of this ship, I'm looking forward to that. You know, seeing what that's about. Yeah. So.
And anyone who's got a picture of them with a dog is right up my street. You got to like them, haven't you?
Yeah.
But I mean, I think a few years ago we got a lot of people who were making comics about bands, sort of slightly obscure bands, because they thought it made them cool.
Yeah.
And it got a bit up my nose a few years ago, and I'm like, oh Christ, just do a comic. I don't want to hear about how much you love such and such band or what effect, you know, the Breeders or someone like they said.
Yeah.
But this is done from much more of a sort of fun point of view. And I really did enjoy this. I think we're a couple of years past that sort of trendy thing where people would do that. Oh, it's not a comic, it's a zine about a band. And I just made me fucking want to vomit, to be fair. But this is much better. Much better. The other one, I've got a couple more I was going to talk about. The other one, next one was Another Day at the Office by Daryl Thorpe. So it's Thorpey, isn't it? What else do you need to know about that? It's fucking great. It's full of... Thorpey has got a way with phrases, isn't he? One of my favourites was "Ride that creative cloud." I like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's basically about him sitting in the office and listening to music, and he's got these sort of he's got playlists. So he's got metal, 90s hip hop, creative, and it's the creative plane of tunage. And it's done in his sort of characteristically sort of graffiti style, I suppose, isn't it?
That
he's got this sort of definitely street art style to it. And he's riding a cloud over the procrastination yetis, and it's great. It's if Zappa was still alive and wanted someone to, you know, visualize all his songs, you'd get Thorpey on board, wouldn't you?
God, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's that sort of stuff. Colorful energy, really good. I always enjoy his stuff. You know, we're big fans of his, as everyone knows. The next one I'm going to talk about is Neil McKenzie and Bob Turner. Look at Bob getting mentioned again. I think it's the third week in a row. Yeah. And it's How Sam's Goose Got Cooked. And this is the one that is referred to in the intro about how Sam Cooke got murdered. But it's done in that sort of gridded system that Bob does a lot of his comics in. It's sort of three separate muted flat colours on a really sort of stylish style of... I mean, the last page is just a 9-panel grid of a radio talking about what had happened. And the last panel is radio off. And that's the last panel in the comic, if you see what I mean. So it's done. Yeah. It works really well. I just love the way that Sam Cooke's nose, I don't know if you notice this, Vince, Sam Cooke's nose is just an arrow pointing downwards.
Yeah.
It just It just like really, I don't know why, it just like really works.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know Sam Cooke's history, he was likely murdered by someone who then got off at court around who got found not guilty at court around the murder.
Oh, okay.
It's just a little bit of history, a little bit of cool art, a little bit of funny. Really good. It's from Analog Press. It's only £4. It's good value. It's nice cardstock, colour throughout, lovely design cover. I don't know what you thought, Vince, but the cover liked. It's got a big. It's if you looked at it from a distance, you think, oh, that's like a sci-fi cover.
Yeah.
But what it is rather than look from a distance, you think, oh, that's a building. It's not. It's a pile of speakers like you used to see at the side of the stage of the Astoria or something.
Yeah.
And above it is a sort of hovering spacecraft, sort of hovering futuristic craft. With some moons in the background. Really, really nice. Really, really gorgeous
that's by
design.
Anthony Downey, who gets credited as well.
Yeah. And really good it is, yeah. There's some really good people in it. It's well worth a look. £4. If you go to, I think I'll write the website down, if you bear with me. Analogpress.co.uk. Go and get it from them. Get a copy. Yeah. Good stuff.
And there's four, nice one. It's issue four, and there's plenty of others.
He sent me issue one through as well.
Yes, I got issue one as well. And a green little badge.
That's a lovely cover as well.
Yeah. So the whole thing is a professional little package, so I definitely going to be picking up two and three.
Yeah.
Next time I see them. So, yeah, this is great
stuff.
Yeah,
clever, Mr. Cook. Clever what you did to us there.
Okay, Dan, what have you got?
I'll go for my first one, which is Gung Ho. I'm not quite sure. This is one of the ones sent in to us. It's really interesting. You ready for me to murder the names? Because here you go. Written by Mike Lononowski, art by Mihajo Dimitrovski.
That sounds fine.
It's almost like I'm a native. And it's lettered by Marco Delaverde. It's the synopsis is a fugitive ape fighting to redeem his militant past must battle vengeful superheroes and bigoted humans as he races to stop his radicalized mentor fused with dangerous powers. I'm not sure when this one got sent through. It was
a couple of months ago, I think. And it was one of the ones that immediately just jumps out at you. And one of my thoughts was, this looks like something to be right up Dan Street.
It's kind of the comic's set in a world where there's like anthropomorphic animals that kind of live alongside humanity, and they kind of do as the humans do, running around like in clothes doing jobs, but they're kind of very much a subclass, and the humans look down on them and think they're all kind of a bit scummy, but there's a few kind of who don't. And Gung Ho, the lead character, he's like a former terrorist who used to carry out like attacks and atrocities trying to bring like the rights of animals up. When he realized that wasn't working, he kind of turned his back on it and works now as a sort of a hero trying to paint animals in a good light and say, look, this is the things we can do. In doing so, he stitches up his old best friend and leader of this terrorist group called Hector, who comes back later in the comic. It's really nice. Comic starts off with him rescuing like a Hollywood starlet, and the art style, it's really hard to describe. Do you remember in The Incredibles, there's like the credit sequences and they're these really highly stylized, angular kind of depictions of the characters.
Yeah.
It's like that, but kind of more refined. And it's like that throughout, very harsh contrasts of color. There's not a lot of black lines, heavy black lines defining things, but shapes and people are defined by the colors next to them. So things are not outlined. It's a really nice art style, really pops. And it kind of, it finds itself more as it goes through the book. Yeah. It's definitely one of those ones, right? The artist has tried this, and then by the time the second half of the book's kicked in, they've got their head around it, and it's really kind of firing on all cylinders. It's weird. It's kind of just got like a cartoony look, but when you get close up with stuff, it's like a lot of Japanese stuff. When it's a faraway shot, you might see like it's a very kind of plain-looking sword, but when it goes very close up, they spend a lot of time detailing. It's a really nice little thing they've got going on. The story, it tackles some sort of political issues, but doesn't do it in such a way that you think, oh, God, this is a bit... hacky.
Somebody's just got an axe to grind, you mean? Yeah.
It kind of works well. It's kind of, they don't lay on too thick, and it's done well. I really enjoyed it. It's a great comic. It's only a one shot, and I think they're sort of testing the waters to see if they'd do more, but it feels like a great setup to a character I'd like to see more of.
I've just opened it now, mate, and I regret not having read this already, because there's some great little, when he does a bit of a Stan Sakai, doesn't he, when he kills people, like the ninjas, the little skulls that appear
over their
heads and stuff like that. Really nice. Yeah.
It's on Comixology for a few quid. I'd really recommend checking it out. It's a good one.
How many pages is it? It's quite a few pages, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite chunky. Long, isn't it?
Yeah. There's the I can remember the name of them. There's like a League of Superheroes, which are like Avenger-esque.
Called
the Champions of Humanity. And one of them is like a lady, but she's got like the Statue of Liberty mask and fists on, but then it's like a normal lady's body underneath. That's a great costume. It's really kind of weird looking.
If you're a real American, that's who you'd want to go out with, isn't it?
Hell yeah. Yeah. Lady Liberty herself.
Yeah.
So kind of, I really enjoyed it. Great comic. It's one of those ones, like Vince said, like, I wish I'd bloody picked this up earlier and got cracking with it.
Yeah.
So, this looks great, mate. I'm going to read this tomorrow now. This looks fucking ace.
Yeah.
And it's like rhino prisoners and all this sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, they have like a prison break. You kind of, without going into too much spoilers, there's loads of Shittery's ex-best friend that kicks off, and it feels like a real, it's weird, it's kind of like watching a cartoon at some moments. It's pretty nice.
Claymore is clearly based on me.
Is it a Scottish vigilante?
Called
Claymore, and it's weird because I've got a drunken Scotsman with a ginger beard and sort of
it's not a cliche at all, is it?
Check that one out. And I apologize to any of the creators who listened to this and I murdered your name, but it's part of the course
for
the show.
Yeah.
It's ace. I'd love to see what they come up with next after this, actually.
Yeah, definitely.
That exploding city scene is fucking lovely.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Yeah.
I'm a bit old school with my kind of art, because mine's like, right, you draw this in your pencil, then you scan it, and then you get cracking with it. Where a lot of people just kind of, they load it up digitally and just start creating away. And it's the same way you mentioned with...
Go on, mate. I was going to say, it's not loads of like Photoshop effects and stuff. It's got a clean, I don't know how to put it. It's not like fuzzy Photoshop poser nonsense.
Yeah.
It's clear and distinct on the page, which is what I much prefer, you know? Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff like you mentioned with Daryl's before. Like, his art style's great, but it's so... I think I'd find that so hard to work in. I don't know if I could work in that kind of style. Do you know what I mean? It's very alien to what I do, but I love it for that and many other reasons.
Yeah.
So, hats off to
all kinds of art, can't you? That's the beauty of comics, isn't it? You can you don't have to like one style, do you?
Nice.
As long as it works, that's the only...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the only thing that counts. Mm.
Yeah. And I think our listeners will definitely like get a kick out of this one. It is. Yeah, sometimes you can tell.
Yeah, it's fun reads.
Yeah.
And it's because sometimes where stuff gets sent in, you kind of get a couple of pages in and it's like, oh, I'm not sure if this is working.
Yeah.
And then some like this, when you finish it and well, that's fucking great. And before you know it, you just blasted for it.
Yeah,
I'm going to be all over whatever else these guys have got coming out. I'm going to be all over it. Just and I haven't read it properly. I just scanned through it while you've been talking. Mm. So that's Red Fox Comics, isn't it? Is that right? Yeah.
I'll have to check that. I did not put that down in my copious notes.
Literally, the last page, it says Red Fox Comics is where I found that. Okay. Yeah.
So I can look him up on... I've got the link. I'll send the Comixology link on to it. It's 69p on Comixology.
Oh, that's good.
69p for all those pages.
55 pages.
Yeah. If you've got Comixology, folks, there's no excuse.
There's a Twitter account here for redfox_write. WRITE. So Mike Lonowski must be part of the company, I suspect.
Yeah.
He's the writer, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, definitely one to keep on your radar.
Yeah.
My first one that I'm going to talk about is one that we had, one of the more recent ones. Betty the Slayer Mitchell, number one.
Oh, yeah.
Saw this come in.
Which is from Marcosia.
There you go. Talk about them again. I was talking about them today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Met with Sidesy for breakfast. We were talking about Marcosia.
Good old Sidesy.
He put his book out, didn't he, from them?
Yes, Impossible.
Yeah.
Very good.
Cool.
This is issue 1 of 5. It's going to be 5 issues coming out over the rest of 2018 and early next year, all digitally first, and I think they're going to do a collected print trade next year. I believe that's the model they're going for.
Okay.
This is created, written, and lettered by Alex Giles. Now, I'm going to murder a couple of names now. Now, Cardet Oki is the artist, and Tico Capdevilla is on the colours.
Nice.
There you go. I've probably absolutely murdered those names, but never mind. The basic setup for this one is a spate of grisly murders leads to a desperate plea for help from renowned monster hunter Betty the Slayer Mitchell, who isn't from EastEnders. I knew that's where your mind was going.
It'd improve EastEnders if this was fucking EastEnders, wouldn't it? I'd actually watch it.
EastEnders
canon.
We need some more of this. But this particular plea is personal, though. And when she finds out that the brutal killer is none other than Springheel Jack, it was he that attacked Betty previously and led her to the path she's now on. So, hunting down monsters of legend, and she wants some closure. So, that's your basic setup. And if you look at the cover, straight from the get-go, you know this is in like the dark and horror-styled territory. Because the cover itself, which is quite a strong cover, I think, the title character is actually licking blood off her weapon of choice, which is quite a badass sort of scythe.
That can't be safe, can it? You're going to catch all kinds of
diseases. This is one of the things I thought. That scythe is also covered in guts and gore, so it's not the most hygienic of choices.
Definitely.
But
all kinds of things have gone in our mouths at some point or other, haven't they? Do you know what I mean?
For another show, I think.
Yeah.
or a therapist.
Yeah. I mean, it's a dark. It definitely catch your eye. I think this cover, and it's definitely sort of quite striking. There's like an eyeball on the end of the scythe, so immediately it tells you what it is straight away. But to the story at large, this is actually, it's a pulpy, sort of fast-paced action book. It doesn't mess about. It wastes no time at all getting you stuck in and letting you know what it's all about. It's based in sort of Victorian London, so if you like the, you know, Penny Dreadful or League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or things like that, then if you like those sort of stories and steampunky type style stuff as well, then this is your bag, really. The synopsis sort of talked about Springheel Jack, and in the first page you see like it starts off with an attack and his latest murder, and as I was thinking, this is going to be a 5-issue series, you know, based on that synopsis you think it's gonna be a 5-issue series of cat and mouse against like this monster hunter versus her, but it's not. This book takes a turn halfway through, and I realized that this Betty isn't just gonna be dealing with Jack, and by the end of the issue she faces off against the Jersey Devil too, which looks awesome, and it actually becomes clear that it's a series about sort of a kick-ass Victorian femme fatale, like hunting and killing famous sort of monsters, legendary monsters and stuff.
It's a little bit like a Xenoscope book to me.
Yes, it does have that
feel about that.
It does have that kind of feel about it. That's a very good way to sort of say it. The story has those sort of like sort of femme fatale sort of turn, you know, and there is a focus on this character being cool. It's not overtly sexy.
No, there's no nudity in it or anything, is there? No. The only one I did giggle a tiny bit at is, not spoiling it because you've already alluded to it, but Springheel Jack bites it, doesn't he? He gets it in the first 10 pages. I think it's like page 8 or 9. If you go to that, you've got a whole page.
Is that when she's turning away? She's walking away.
Yeah. And you get that woman on the tennis court image, don't you? Tiny bit. I know she's got trousers on, but there's a cheeky butt.
Is about the colouring, because the colouring of her trousers is that sort of like khaki sort of trouser.
And I gave that a second look.
To give that a second look. Yeah. So in some, if that's the intention, then it's quite clever. Because that was one of the, when I was flicking through it at first, that was one of the first issue sort of images I saw, and I thought, oh, is it going to be one of those books?
It's not really, though, is it? It's not. That's just a random image. I've got to tell you, you can tell that the artist isn't from London, because I don't know. Is that meant to be Tower Bridge in the background there? It's meant to be somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not quite right, but you still get that feel of it being Victoriana, London.
It isn't one of those. When you think of Victorian London, and it's certainly when artists sort of depict it, or movies, it's always like, you know, washed out greys. It's all smoky. Everything's grim. Mm. This isn't a grim looking London so much.
Yeah, they play on her hair, don't they? Because she's got sort of very red hair, isn't she?
Yes.
And they play on the colour of that. And that's cleverly done, I think. You know, I really like that. And a lot of the artwork is actually pretty accomplished. This artist could easily be doing a DC or a Marvel book. He's got that every angle. There's a scene in the at dockyards with a big ship in the background and the light playing off the ship and a big ship and a big crowd and all this sort of thing. It's really well done. Yeah,
it's
good.
Really nice
it's really professionally put together, I think. And like you say, I think this it's a style that would fit in quite. I mean, a DC book just like that, I can see it sort of fitting, sort of, because DC has that sort of house style, don't they?
Yeah, it does.
There's a couple of faces that remind me of like Derek Robertson.
Yeah,
where he does.
Okay,
And the action's great as well because the story just sort of steps back and lets it. You know, I mean, the main character Betty, she's a no nonsense sort of monster killer, and reading it, the book certainly likes to focus on the moments when she just completely kicks ass. Let's face it,
this is done for the it's done for the Buffy crowd, isn't it? I don't do anyone wrong by, you know, designing a book, because Buffy, I noticed today it popped up in my Twitter stream, is there's a couple of Buffy podcasts still. It's a really well respected series. I enjoyed it.
If you were doing an elevator sort of pitch, if you were going, you know, the crossbreeding of two sort of TV shows or whatever, I would say this is Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets Penny Dreadful.
And then you got it.
To be honest, just hearing that, if I knew a show like that exists, I'd fucking watch it.
Buffy ended a fair old time ago now, hasn't it?
But
20 years?
It's the anniversary, isn't it? Of like 20 years, I think, this year.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, I think. But I'm set in Victorian, the sort of era as well. One thing I noticed, like, Nikolai Tesla is in it. Like, she bumps into her old friend. You know, like, everyone just knows him. He's kind of like a Q-like character. And he sort of supplies her with a sort of steampunky styled weapon, which comes in handy towards the end of the book, when she gets a sidekick and he helps out fighting a monster.
That's quite a cool looking gun, actually. I like that.
Yeah,
it's a cool design.
And the colouring's lovely on it, I will say. Yeah.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah, bright, and it's a good read. Yeah. Look at that second week running. We talked about Marcosia now.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, and it's a very professionally put together book. I mean, I will say that, you know, the three sort of creators on it have all come together. They're on the right page, I think.
Yeah.
That I had a couple of minor quibbles. But they're purely from like an aesthetic standpoint. Now, like the cover is like super strong, like from the artwork and everything. I wasn't a fan of the fonts they've used for the title and the creator names. That's not a make or break thing, you know. That's, I mean, being a designer in like my day job and stuff, and having doing books and CD covers and stuff, I know where those fonts come from. I've seen those fonts.
I get you.
So it's like
I'm actually a fan of the symbolism on the cover, because it's slightly misleading.
Yes, the symbolism is a bit
makes
more
it look
sexual.
Like she's a vampire, maybe.
Yeah,
as well,
it's a little more sexualized than the interior, because you see the character on the interior of the books. She's just like a kick-ass. She's almost like a... It's almost pulp, isn't it? You know, she... Because it has her sort of monologues and, you know, the narration is from her standpoint. You know, and she's no... She doesn't mess about. I see what you mean, Tony. There's nothing in the book...
That's why it reminded me of a Zenoscope book, because of that.
Let's
face it, sex sells, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It does.
And the cover itself... Yeah, the cover will get people's attention. You'll notice this cover.
Which is
the point of it. And the only other thing...
I see you flick to page one, and I think the artwork and tone of that overshadows the cover.
Oh, completely. Yeah, completely.
You soon get it, don't you?
It doesn't take long to sort of, you know, before you know it, you're in the story and, you know, it's taking you away. But with that first page, I mean... In the first scene, Springheel Jack sort of attacks someone and sort of murders them. And the person, because of the style and the colouring, the person he attacks looks very similar to the main character. So it continued, it took me just a slight moment to realise it was someone completely different. It was a victim instead of the main character. So, I mean, I think if it was just a different hair colour, if it was a lighter hair colour on the person that gets attacked, then I wouldn't have noticed that, you know.
Yeah, do you know what? I haven't read it yet, and I presume, I was flicking through, I presumed that was the same character.
Yeah.
Because of the moonlight and,
Because naturally...
Yeah, it just made her blonde.
Yeah, that was exactly. That was one of the first things that maybe... It took me a couple of pages to then get on the same page as the sort of story, if you know what I mean, because that took me out of it for a slight moment. So if you do pick this up, folks, and read it, don't be confused. There's a victim on the first page, then you've got the kick-ass heroine for the rest of it. They're minor quibbles, I think.
It's a good, well-put-together adventure book, which I kind of like. I like the idea of doing that, do you know what I mean?
And it's a fun first issue and the debut of like an actual character book. Which I think we need more of. I think
definitely.
I'm all for you know just sort of stories, but I'm also you know I created a book called The Red Mouse from Mars. I'm a big fan of characters, this is cool.
It used to be speaking of comics, the go-to thing to make like a kick-ass female lead. But even now, that feels a bit kind of like okay, this has been done. I'm not having a pop at them. By the way,
that's
it. Feels
So they have to step in with something different, and I'll watch this series to see how it develops because this is a strong first issue, and it doesn't mess about. It properly rolls at a certain pace. Before I knew it, I was at the end of the book, and I'd met like Tesla. There was all these gadgets, you know, that she'd like basically taken out two monsters in the first issue, and I was like, whoa, you know, this is, you know, so Lord knows where the story will go by the five issues. So it'd be an interesting one to check out. It is available now on Comixology as well. Like I say, they're all going to be digital, so I'm not sure if they'll be available on anywhere else apart from Comixology.
I'm not sure, actually.
Do Marcosia go on any other?
I'll have to check, mate. I'm 100% sure.
Yeah. But if you want to check it out, you can always see some preview pages on Comixology anyway, can't you? It's available for $1.49. So if you're a fan of like we say Buffy and Penny Dreadful and all that sort of stuff, then it's well worth checking out. Alex Giles, you can follow him on Twitter at Muldwych, which is MuldWych. Yeah, but it's definitely one to keep an eye on. I think you know, see how it develops. Is you know, you don't normally see a character like. Well, I mean, I don't necessarily. I haven't seen a character like this probably on the independent sort of UK European. You know. On our side for quite some time. So, I mean, I used to open previews and like you say, you look at the Xenoscope and you'd see God knows how many.
Yeah, a lot of cleavages.
Yeah. But I'm hoping that this book goes somewhere else and does something different. And if it does it and does it well, then I'm on board.
Yeah. I think Xenoscope on occasion gets a bad name. A friend of mine, Sheldon Goh, he draws for Xenoscope and he does a lot of their books. And I think... if you get past the cover, they're actually so a lot of them are actually pretty good.
Yeah,
I just think they just play on the sales technique. Sexy airbrush ladies.
Exactly,
know?
And for instance, you could say Avatar. They're someone for me that fall into the other category of the gore cover. You know, so you got sex and death, and sometimes when you're overdoing that, it. Personally, it just turns me off. I'm like, no, I just...
Or somebody like Deja Thoris or Warlord of Mars or something like that. You know, if the costume that Deja Thoris wears in John Carter, the movie, is nothing compared to the ones they put her on in the cover of the comic. You know, and I'm sure it's for a reason. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
None of us are naive enough to think that doesn't sell, you know, to whoever men
we've
or
talked,
women are
We've talked
it.
About yeah. Kickstarters that have come up that do immensely well. Based on, let's face it, TNA.
Brass eyes, basically, isn't it? Yeah. You know what I mean?
There you go. Okay. Yeah, so that's mine. Who's gonna step up to the plate next?
Do we want to do a question next? Do we?
Yes. We've got a shout out to the listeners. And we've got a couple of questions.
No.
Right, let's see what we've got here. Now, the first one is going to be... here we go. This is going to be from SJ Webster. Your Sam Webster.
Okay.
At SJ Webster Art. He said, with Dan Slott moving over to Iron Man after years on Spider-Man, which is 200 issues straight, I think, is what it says, are there any creators with such a close link to and strong legacy on a non-creator-owned character?
Yeah, there's been a lot, haven't there?
Yeah, I would say you probably find that more in the older comics. I mean, we talk like in this day and age, Dan Slott staying on for that book for that time is almost unheard of. You know, I would say similar to when
Bendis did the Ultimate Spider-Man.
You know, we've talked about like Kirby.
Claremont and X-Men.
Yeah. Kirby did. Yeah. How many Fantastic Four issues did he do before he stopped?
Yeah. There's a lot of it. I was thinking about it when I saw the tweet a minute ago, and I'm thinking, well, somebody like Joe Kubert on Sergeant Rock or someone like that as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes on, you know, and non-creator, if it's creator owned, then you can obviously quote stuff like Grimjack or Cerebus or, you know, Nexus or something like that. Yeah. But. Yeah, I think in the Marvel fold, there are quite a few, aren't there?
Yeah, there's also for me, there's some of the ones that it feels like they were on it longer than they actually were, because when I was reading it at the time, like when I hit the X-Men in the 90s, we're talking Jim Lee, and of course I got into that like when he was on Uncanny before it became X-Men as well. So for the longest period of time, I just thought Jim Lee was on it for so long, but. You know, how long was he actually on it? Like,
when you think three? not a hugely a long time.
Yeah,
I'd say someone as well like Carmine Infantino. I mean, the Flash, his work on the Flash is a real sweet spot for me.
Yeah,
you know, I absolutely love it. Or someone like maybe Mike Grell on Warlord, the British comic. There's a lot of people. I like the fact that a consistent artwork on a comic is a real plus for me. To be able to go to it month in, month out, and know what you're getting, I think it's a real plus. You know,
I said any of the original Image creators, because they're synonymous with the top. Well, most of them, synonymous with the titles they came from. But
I think they're creator owned, though, aren't they? That's the thing.
Yeah, true. They've gone on from like with the books they were working on, like Spider-Man and.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy. Who's the guy who did Shadow Hawk? I'm forgetting his name. Blanking on
it. Jim Valentino.
Yeah, Valentino on Guardians of the Galaxy. He was on that for a long time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Was that what he did? Wilson, I must say, Valentino is the one. He was my blind spot on the image.
Yeah. There's kind of two parts to Valentino, aren't there? There's the Marvel stuff he did on books like that. And then he also did a lot of sort of underground comics-y type stuff, quite lively stuff. So there's almost the two angles to that guy. A really interesting character. I think of all of them, he's got that sort of twinkle in his eye, hidden depth thing going on sometimes, I think.
Yeah. Do we want another one? Should we do another one?
Okay.
Yeah, why not?
This one from The Gibster. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
At James Gibbs on Twitter. He said, has anyone read any Archie comics? I tried Vampire Ronica the other day and wondered if it was comparable to the rest of their horror output. Have you read any of, like, you know, when Archie did that, was it Francesco Francavilla?
Yeah. I read that. I tried to read it. That's weird, because we had a conversation about Franco Francavilla this week, didn't we? I kind of like him sometimes. I find him annoying when he's a little bit too photo reverential, and I'm not a huge fan of his interiors. I find them a little bit too scratchily simplistic sometimes.
Yeah.
And I tried that Archie zombie book. What was the name of it now?
Afterlife
with Archie. Yeah. And I kind of, it's okay. It's not bad. It's just, it just didn't fit in with what I liked.
Yeah. I heard good things about Sabrina as well.
I've heard great things about that. Yeah. I might give that a go.
I did pick up Vampironica number one, actually.
Oh, you said last week, didn't you?
Yeah.
What's that like?
Really good. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
Is it
Giselle Lagasse? Is it on it, or is it someone else?
I've got the Smallwoods, Greg Smallwood and Meg Smallwood.
Oh, of course it is. It's their brother and sister, aren't they?
Yeah.
I only know that because 11 o'clock comics announced that this week. Oh. They were talking about it, but yeah, I must try that. And I follow Greg on Instagram, and I really like his stuff.
It's a beautiful looking book. The reason I picked it up was it is so gorgeous looking, but it's got quite a cool sort of pulpy story. You don't have to have any history with Archie, really. I've got a very basic history with Archie. I know a lot of our American listeners, you know, it's been a staple.
I remember he and I both worked at Bumley's together.
Good old Bumley's.
My wife watches that Riverdale.
I've watched a couple of that. Yeah. It's like Twin Peaks for teenagers.
Yeah. It's kind of, people were sort of saying that it's just full of sex and drugs and et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, but Archie back in the day when it was first made, it was tackling the issues that were then. this TV series is more kind of for the now.
Yeah, yeah. It's not unwatchable, I have to say. I've watched a couple on the train and that. It's all right. Yeah. And I used to enjoy reading. I think every year, didn't Archie put out a little a free comic book day? Like,
yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Didn't know there was an Archie and Punisher crossover.
Yes, I've got that. Yeah. That's very good. Yes.
And never...
Yeah. The I actually kind of like them for what they are. They're just kitschy, sort of funny, sort of newspaper strip style stories, aren't they?
Yeah. You know, and they are moving.
Betty and Veronica, like, who's going to get with him first? And
it does.
You know, that's
it surprises me, like, how popular and well done the supernatural stuff is. You know, that's almost become a subgenre of Archie, doesn't it? It's, you know, it's, I think there's a isn't there a Jughead one where he's a werewolf? I think.
Yes, there isn't there.
And they're all like serious creators of like. You know, serious fans of horror, these people are like taking it deadly seriously and like doing their best to make proper stories. Which is why it works. And they're moving into TV. I think there's a Sabrina TV show.
There isn't there? Yeah. I was speaking to who's the lady from Wales with the blue hair, hangs about with Emily, and she does sort of Marvel cards. She does the art for Marvel cards and stuff and colouring in books. Oh, blanking on that.
Oh, I can't believe my brain is Anastasia Katris.
Anastasia. I was chatting to her once at a convention, and she went to the Cubitt School, Anastasia, for those who didn't know, and she was telling me about it. And Dan Parent, who's best known for Archie, and he's got that style. Apparently, every year Dan Parent tries out for an X-Men book because he just loves the X-Men, and never gets it. And I kind of like that, don't you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd love to see an X-Men drawn in an Archie style as well.
Oh, God, yeah.
I think that'd be really good.
Great.
Yeah.
I don't know why they wouldn't try it. Lord knows they've tried enough things with bloody
X-Men. Bloody
have.
Yeah. It does. I remember there was the... was it Mark Waid did the an ongoing? And it was the it was infamous for being the one that they launched on Kickstarter. Do you remember a few years ago?
Yeah.
They financed the 2 issues by launching it on Kickstarter, and everyone's going, well, why are they doing that? They've got the money. You know, if they can't... And that ran for a bit, and it was the lady who draws. Oh, I've forgotten her name now. It'll come back to me in a minute. But it was, I think, it was quite well received for a while. Yeah. And it was a sort of an adult take. It was a bit like Riverdale before Riverdale came out, I think, as I understand it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But there you go. Yeah. Check.
Don't see them because in America it's very popular, Archie. Yeah. They sell by the checkout and supermarket.
It's one of the last books that you can get on the newsstands, isn't it? Really.
Yeah, but we don't get it here, like that, do we? No. Yeah. Okay. No.
There you go. And like one more question before we go to the next round.
Okay.
This is the open one from Kirk Spencer at Big Five Army. Have you personally fallen in love with the title? Well, so you've fallen so in love with the title, you start tracking down a creator's previous work and examples, please. Oh.
Yeah.
Without getting into specifics, coming across, I said before the show, like coming across stuff on Twitter with creators, and like fucking hell, and then you go into their links and look what they've done. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But pulling out a single example, bloody hell, that's a great question.
Yeah.
That's one to drop on, isn't it? Yeah. I'm gonna plump for some of the European creators that we've because most comic artists, because we've been reading for so long, we kind of know them already, don't we? I suppose.
Yeah. Mm.
But the ones that we're discovering, for me anyway, the ones that I'm discovering more are the European ones. And I'm thinking of someone like Leo or someone like that. He did Audubon. And he's now doing The Survivors. And I certainly went back and looked at some of his other books like Kenya and all that sort of thing on the Isneo app. And I bought a shitload of stuff just because I really liked his sort of unusual style. Put it that way. So definitely for the European ones, because a lot of the stuff is now getting released digitally, we haven't seen it before, and you're able now to explore what they've done before. Like the I'm blanking on the artist on Carthago, but like his, I went back and looked at his stuff, the writer of that book and that sort of thing. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on for me.
Yeah,
but in relation to the mainstream American books, you know, there's so many artists and writers that I follow that I'm kind of familiar for what they did before. There's a few little blips that I go back and discover. Like we mentioned Joe Kubert earlier, I met Joe Kubert in New York a couple of years before he passed away, and I obviously was familiar with his Sergeant Rock and, you know, Viking Prince and stuff like that. And I went back and discovered some of the other stuff he'd written, like Tor, which I absolutely fell in love with.
Yeah.
But there's only little bits that you've missed, isn't there? Sometimes, you know.
I mean, for a lot of the time, you're there at the moment when they first sort of hit the scene or you first discover them and stuff. One of the, I'd have to go to one of my favourite artists was Jason Pearson. When I can't remember when I first saw him. I think it might have been, there was a Savage Dragon Blood and Guts. He did a miniseries. He wrote and did the art for that. And sort of like from then, I was on board for his sort of work from then on. But I went back and there was like, I think he did some X-Men issues and he did some other issues. And you know, I didn't necessarily have the issues, but the Google searches. Do you know what I mean? You know, just looking for the artwork and then just trying to see whatever artwork I could of his and just sort of like soak it all in. I remember, you know, I even sort of stored loads of stuff and I was going to do some sort of crazy fan page for it at one point when at the height of my fandom, you know, just collect all it because I thought there's all this amazing artwork, but it's all in completely different places. You know, it should all be in one place for someone to see. Of course, these days you can find those sort of things left, right, and centre, can't you? But
yeah. That's it, isn't it? The days of us writing down. I remember sort of even like film directors I really liked. I'd sort of go through books to discover what other films they'd made, so I can go and see them. That name I was blanking on, by the way, Christoph Beck is the writer of Carthago, and I went back and looked at loads of his stuff in the last few months. Yeah. Just like tore up through it. You know, really good stuff.
I mean, I find that. Some of the big classics, you know, some of these major names that I haven't necessarily, you know, there's going to be some that I haven't been sort of converted to at the moment.
Yeah.
Or they weren't for me at the time. Yeah. I know, and I'm looking forward to those moments where, obviously, I've read a lot of his work, so just take this as hypothetical, you know, like Mobius. Do you know what I mean? I discovered a book of his now, and I was like, oh my God, this is like my favorite stuff ever. You know, how exciting it would be to go back and then just discover everything he did before.
I like the fact there's a lot of new readers now starting who might not have read, I don't know, Gil Kane or Starenko or even Kirby and all these sort of people, you know. They've got the benefit of now being able to go back, find comics that we could never find before without paying like £100, and read whatever they like historically, or often for like pence.
And there's certainly like modern artists that I'm massive fans of, and I remember being there when they just, you know, they first kind of arrived. There's a new Avengers book coming out. Ed McGuinness is going to be the artist for the first few issues.
That's
going to
say a few
up. He's great.
Yeah, and I was like, that is brilliant.
I really love his chunkiness.
And,
these people,
you know, if someone discovers that and then go, they've got, you know, he worked on Superman, Batman, you know, he worked on. He worked with Rob Liefeld a lot, didn't he? I remember when Rob Liefeld did Awesome Comics. Do you remember that?
Fighting
American and stuff like that. He did Mr. Majestic, and of course he did the second limited edition, the miniseries of Deadpool, because Joe Madureira did the first. This is before Deadpool became anything like anyone knows him now. Joe Madureira did the first one, which I think is the Circle Chase, and then Ed McGuinness did the second one, I think.
Yeah. And, I'll tell you who's someone who's jumped out for me as well recently, and he's been a guest, is Nick Brokenshire.
Oh,
I love Nick's
work.
And I'd always sort of been aware of Amelia Cole, but it was always a book that I thought, well, it's a magician girl. I'm a 83-year-old man. It's probably not for me. And then
it's much like we talked about that Betty the Slayer. You know, you look at something and you think you've got an idea of what you're going to get.
Yeah, exactly. And he gifted me the first volume very kindly, and I read it, and I absolutely love Nick's work. I absolutely adore it, and I'm since now anything that he'll do, I'll follow. I'll go and find, and you know. Nice. And we've had a few people on here like that. Do you know what I mean? That's been the really good thing about it. You know.
Yeah.
Al Ewing, for example. Al Ewing's a great writer. Why Al is not more lauded amongst the guys? I would read anything that geezer writes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've been back and looked through some of his 2000 AD stuff and all that sort of thing. You know.
Yeah. There was a creator, I can't remember who it was, relatively well known, complaining that younger comic readers don't have to be interested in like the older people writing comics. And it's like, yeah, fair enough.
They don't have to be. Yeah.
I feel like at some point you stand on the shoulders of giants, kind of we're at where we are because there's just such a great body of work that's been done in comics. And I feel like not reading some of that stuff, you're doing yourself an injustice.
Yeah.
There's some great stuff there, and
And because we're so enthusiastic about the medium, when someone says, "Oh, I've never read anything by, I don't know, John Romita," we're like, "Oh, you're going to love it. You should read this. Yeah. You should read that." That's how it works for me, anyway. That's how I think of it. You know.
So, we did have one more little question, and this is from Daryl Thorpe, old 4P, second mention. He says he's very excited about the new cinematic Spider-Man movie, and this is the animated one.
Right.
I think, what do you guys think, and does a world filled with spider people make for an exciting storyline or not?
I'm unaware of this.
Yeah, it's going to be a cinema released animation movie, isn't it? As I understand it. Which Spider-Man?
It's Miles Morales.
Miles is it? Okay, right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm if it's good, I like it. I think, to be fair, I don't know. I'm a bit of a. I like that Spider-Man is kind of this lonely character with this power.
Yeah.
I like that he's a sort of bit of an outsider. Yeah. I was always a bit like, you know, he doesn't really fit in the Avengers. And stuff like that for a little bit. Yeah. And having loads of spider people, I don't know. Although I think Miles is such a good character. One of the few from the last few years who will continue on, I think. You know, there's a lot of new characters they experiment and try with. And I think Miles has got a proven track record of donkey's years now, really, when you look at it.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years, I don't know. How long's Miles been about? 5, 8 years? I don't know.
Oh, God.
I like the fact that they're making a movie about him and kids will like it. But
yeah.
I just like the fact that whether it be him or it be Peter or whoever it be, I'd like the Marvel Universe just to have one.
Yeah.
Just have this kid who's fighting crime in New York. And
I do find, you know, for me, there's a few too many storylines. I mean, I'm sure I enjoy this film, but just in comics in general.
Yeah.
Certainly, I think Marvel fall foul of this a lot. That you see a lot of storylines where, right, Venom's a popular character, let's make everyone a symbiote. Spider-Man's a popular character, you know, let's make everyone, what if everyone has spider powers? There seems to be a lot of just giving everyone this one certain type of power.
Yeah.
Like, I think Iron Man, God knows how many people had Iron Man suits at one point. You know, there seems to be a lot of stuff going on like that. And for
this
me,
dilutes it.
It dilutes it, and also, as if I wanted to jump into a series with things like that, I come in and Doctor Doom is wearing an Iron Man suit. I have no idea.
Yeah, I know.
I have no idea where I am with that. You know, my world is upside down. And I'm not going to go back 2 years or whatever to read how that happened. It kind of turns me off from it a bit. I mean, I think it's
realize there's an iconography to each character. So there's Spider-Man is a kid or a news reporter, stroke photographer, who's on his own in New York, and he fights criminals who have a certain something. You know, there's a lot of animal creation. Yeah. Octopus and Scorpio and the Scorpion and stuff like that. And in he's got his own little vibe. He's got his own little feel. That's his comic. Let's not dilute it by putting him in the X-Men or something like that.
No, exactly. Yeah. It feels like what Sam Raimi was kind of getting in Spider-Man 2, the film. That kind of, he's struggling, trying to keep all these threads of his life together.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like sort of the everyman, but he has a real shit time of it. And like, he's fighting the Vulture and he's got a cold and stuff like that.
That's
the Spider-Man.
I mean, I hope the Miles movie does well, because I've still got the first issue of his in that bag it came in unopened. So I should be selling it on eBay if it does really well.
You won't be selling that.
No, I know. You know me too well.
It'll be probably one of the pile that falls on him and kills him in the end. It looks like a great Simpsons film.
With Seymour Skinner gets covered by the pile of stuff and he has like the ball to bounce with one hand because he's trapped under there for days. Do you remember that one? Have you seen that one?
Oh yeah.
I don't think there'd be any redemption for Tony, because it'd be like piles and piles of stuff.
There's never any redemption coming from
I always wonder, like, with these the legacy characters, how long they're going to stay around with Marvel. I can't say I'm really too up on it, and I know there's a lot of shit online about kind of hating on them and stuff, but I do wonder how long they're going to kind of be around. There's a new animated series coming out soon with all the younger heroes, like America and Miss Marvel, is it, and all the other ones. I can't remember the names. So Marvel hasn't given up on them, certainly.
Yeah. And nor should they, because I think these characters, you know,
if they're a good character, if they're not just like, if they're an interesting character, I'm all for it. But some of them ain't. Yeah. Some of them are.
Yeah.
Same as everything, isn't it? But Yeah, I know what you mean. I have to. The majority of my pull list is Marvel, and it always has been. And I picked up a load of Marvel books this week, and I looked at the art, and I thought they need to get some. They need to get some names in. I've got to tell you, why aren't they reaching back to some of these named artists who are out there? And you know, I just a couple of them look like badly photoshopped web comics to me.
Oh, fuck!
And I was like, there's a Doctor Strange miniseries came out. I think was it last week? And I'm like, what is that?
Yeah.
If it was a webcomic, we'd be ragging on it, I've got to tell you.
You've
mentioned this, Vince, with like a comic, you read it, and then like halfway through it, a change artist or something, and it really fucking pisses on my chips.
I mean, I know it got a lot of controversy, but I really like the Secret Empire series. I really did enjoy that. There was one art change that, as soon as I knew that that was the issue, it sort of made it a bit of a slog. I was like, oh, God, really?
Yeah, know what you mean.
And like... Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry for me looking at it. There was no way to say it was good, and I tried to look at the positive in everything, but I was like, "This is terrible."
I mean, if that has to be done for whatever reason, at least try and get someone's art style who would gel with it and is comparable and on par with. So it's kind of like, oh fuck, it's kind of jarring.
When I saw Staz Johnson put a post up this week saying, "I haven't got any work on at the moment. Who needs a commission?" I thought Marvel should be jumping on that. There's a solid, well crafted, professional, experienced artist. Get him on board now. You know. I don't know. Let's hope it all improves.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still enjoying a load of their books, but so there's the odd one. I think, oh my god, what the fuck is that?
Yeah. And you find that across the board with a lot of the bigger publishers, don't you? Really, but
yeah,
there's always going to be the good. There's always going to be the bad.
It used to be like you could pick up like a Marvel title and it'd be like, and a DC, and you'd like the art was like, this is going to be of certain caliber quality, and then sometimes
and you knew there was a pecking order, you know, Marvel and DC got the cream of the crop of artists, and then you knew some of the other titles wouldn't have, you know, something as you went down a bit, he's learning a bit still, he's working for Boom or Oni or something, you know, one day he'll get a Marvel title, but I don't think it works like that now, doesn't it?
Playing devil's advocate, do you think that's because our tastes have changed? Is it?
I think it may be, mate. I think there's a lot more manga influenced artists out there, especially
and,
at the moment,
and also, you know, there's the rose tinted glasses when you look back on the comics of your youth.
Maybe in a certain sense. I read that Cars,
some of the stuff I used to read, dude. I look back on it now, I'm like, Jesus Christ.
But some of it you still think, I mean, Burn stuff I read, Burn is amazing.
You know,
I read some Dan Atkins stuff and I read some Storenko stuff, you know, you're thinking, oh my god, this is amazing, you know, even with the dodgy, like we talked about last week, the dodgy, you know, colouring from the Bronze and Silver Age comics when they appear on Comixology now, even with that it looks good. Yeah.
You pull out some of the old school Dread, like by Gibbons and stuff like that, and it's like, fucking hell, this is awesome. Even now,
Mike McMahon,
not lost a beat.
Good stands out. There was the odd wobble, wasn't there? Do you know what I mean?
For us, the odd wobble is someone else's favourite artist, probably.
But also with the net, I think the technology changed things. Rather than just having the few artists who could get work in or work in the area, now you're working on a global scale with people who can send their artwork digitally at print quality with no issue whatsoever. So kind of that talent pool's got a lot bigger. Like you look at stuff that Valiant's put out, some of the art on that, it's just like, fucking hell, these are amazing.
Yeah, class.
Anything you can look at, and like, Christ, all the small press stuff is just the art stuff I see, like, Jesus Christ, this is amazing.
Yeah, Sidesy showed me some art from an upcoming comic of his today when I met him, and it was like, I said, this is heavy metal good. This would have been an issue of heavy metal. Yeah, it's that good.
There you go. That was all our little questions. Now, should we do the before our last round of recommendations? Should we do some shout-outs?
Yeah, if you like. Yeah.
Why not? It's our show, and we'll do what we want. What shout-outs have we got, gents?
I've got one, Aaron Rackley from Little Heroes, who, after me heavily hinting on last week's show that I didn't have a copy of Eternal, he sent me one through. How kind is he?
Nice.
Get over to Little Heroes, follow them on Twitter, buy their comics for a good cause. You know, and Aaron sent me that. He said, little thank you for helping out, because I've written, me and Dan are doing another story for the next volume. And it's the one I got is the one with the D. Cuniff little print in it.
Oh, you nice. Know,
yeah, so that's really cool. So I'm well pleased. So that's now on my shelf. Yeah, proudly on my shelf. Really nice stuff. And the other one, just a quick one, is I don't know why, but I've had one of the biggest weeks on the blog this week. Like loads of reads this week. One of the biggest weeks since it's been going, and it's been going about 10 years. And just thank you, everyone who interacts on it and comments on what I say and interacts with me over posts on Facebook that I link it in from and stuff like that. And really nice to see. Thanks a lot to everyone. Yeah.
Nice one.
Just want to give a little shout out to, obviously we do the Kickstarter call outs every Thursday now, hashtag Kickstarter call out. We didn't have many last week.
No.
At all. So if you follow us, then on Thursday, tweet us your Kickstarter campaign, because there's a few of them about at the moment, and we will retweet it, and like maybe we might get a couple of people that don't know about it to check it out. I know that's certainly how I've discovered a few Kickstarters in my time.
Yeah.
But definitely, if you want a good laugh and also discover a good comic, then check out the Kickstarter from Horde Comics. For their volume one of their anthology, which is Andy Turner and crew, who we saw at Swindon, but they've put together a fantastic looking book, lots of crazy different stories in there, and that alone is just I would just tell you to pledge on the comic anyway, because they've got some great sort of pledges and stuff, but their Kickstarter video is one of the best that I've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, it made me laugh earlier. Yeah.
It's properly funny and rewatchable. So it's not one of those sort of stilted, someone sat with a webcam just talking to you for 2 minutes. There's other things going on. I definitely just check it out for the video alone.
My favourite bit is where he plays the piano and then like pauses and closes the lid and then talks to the
yeah.
I pledged on the load of Kickstarters yesterday, actually.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, Andy Cliff's Captain Cosmic is up as well.
Oh, another one to definitely check out. I mean, we love that. You know, that could be recommend of the week. Anyway.
Should we bother making that statement we say every week that we're going to cut down on doing Kickstarters? We never do.
Yeah, no, I know. Right, Horde Comics and Captain Cosmic. That's our recommendations this week for Kickstarters. But if you've got one, then send it on Thursday.
I did do the Tom Ward one as well at the 11th hour.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Oh, damn it. God, there's so many everywhere. So, tweet us on Thursday. That's all I've got to say.
Yeah.
Because I'm losing track of them all. Yeah. So, Dan, do you have any shout-outs?
No.
He doesn't care about anyone.
Usually by the time Sunday rolls around, I've bloody forgotten them.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I always forget to take notes. Every week, actually, which is pretty obvious. Okay, so after all those lovely shout outs, before we get on to the last comics of this show, there's comics all the time, actually, but we did a little competition for the past few weeks to win yourself a year's subscription to Comic House, our lovely sponsors. Go to comichouse.com. But what was the competition again, Tony?
The competition, for those that haven't been listening for the last year, was who would you have sex with? Have sex with Vince or me? No, it wasn't the one. That was the little one in my head.
Yeah.
No
one wins that one. No one wins.
Yeah, it's a mess. Who should we go on a date with? They can be imaginary, real people. They can be inanimate objects or cartoon characters. We had a raft of very funny answers, I have to say. Too many, and I thank everyone for writing in, because we got some crackers, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know. And we came out with a winner. Shall I read the winner the winner out without announcing his name quite yet?
Yeah, go for it.
So here's the winning one, Tony. And to be fair, he probably won this because he gave me a cracker of an answer. So I've actually rung our agent and asked her. It's Tony. Sarah Silverman, possibly the only woman who could hold her own with Tony. Quick with the wit and able to deal with a good tongue lashing. Yeah, you need to give me a minute. probably good at tossing the salad, if Tony's into that sort of thing. Ron Howard voice, he is. There you go. Like that one. Vince. Emma Frost. You did it right, Vince. Vince is the Scott Summers of the Comics Pod, blindly leading the belligerent, what do you mean, Tony, and guiding the scholarly Dan. Is he got the right
scholarly? Guy?
Yeah, Emma would be swayed by Vince's leadership quality, making Emma want to mentally tickle the back of his amygdala. Is that you say? Yeah. Your brain. I don't think you say that. Also, Emma's diamond form would give him the new would give Vince a new meaning to the term polishing one off. That's nice. It's so well constructed.
I like this attack was both the cerebral and the sexual. Yes. Both elements. Yeah. He's very considerate.
I just got a bird with a bit of a filthy attitude, didn't I? Which is kind of good. I kind of like that. Yeah. Dan, Spitfire, Lady Jacqueline Falsworth Crichton. Her name aside, she's the best of British. Close to 100 years old. We know you like the GILF, don't we? A vampire with super speed. The ultimate cougar to fulfill Dan's dreams. Lady J manages life in the fast lane with a poise and grace that Dan has grown accustomed to, obviously with us. Unfortunately, being a vampire, she's not visible in photographs, and no one believes Dan about the hot older woman he's been seeing. So, nicely done, Mark Abnett. Thank you, Mark.
Nice one, Mark. Brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a lot.
Yeah. We have honestly been pissing ourselves with the answers that have come in. Andy CT sent us a really, really good one in, which I think it was. I think he had me shagging Barbara Windsor, I think, in that one. I think. Matt Strott had me having sex with Swamp Thing. You know, it's been a long held dream of mine. You know, we're coming for you. And then Susie Gander did it like one with drawings in it. So it was you and Johnny Bravo. I got to have sex with a cross between. No, I got to have sex with Comic Shop Guy. That's a little bit worrying. And Vince had sex with Top Cat.
Yeah. Seems perfectly fine to me.
Just think about that, people. Just linger on that for a moment.
Didn't Morrow send great moment. Entries from like Mauro. Mauro is our hero, I think it's fair to say, isn't it? Yeah, the emails we get from Mauro, almost like every other weekly or every other week, just make me laugh my tits off.
Fucking great. I love them.
I'm hopefully doing a little bit of a piece for Mauro. We were talking about the difference between reading comics digitally and reading them on a page, and we're going to do like a backwards and forth conversation as a little article thing. I'm really looking forward to that because he's an intelligent guy, Mary. Even though he sends just filth through to my inbox, he does well. But yeah, thanks, Mark. That was brilliant, mate. So we'll be contacting Comic House, Pete Beanpool, and we'll be saying that you're the winner. So if you've already got an account, Mark, it doesn't have to be for you. It can be for someone else. But thanks to everyone who wrote in. We got loads of replies, all of them clearly from people who completely understand us. If anyone wants to draw any art of Vince and a woman made of diamonds, then please go ahead.
Oh god, here we go. Thing is, like, would you dating a telepath? That'd be quite awkward, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, luckily it's pretty much just static in my head all the time.
Yeah. It's like, you know, when
you get bored,
Duracell monkey is just banging cymbals together.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
It's like that, isn't it?
Yeah. And occasionally someone walks in and goes, "Oh no, sorry, wrong room," and then walks out again.
I imagine it'd be quite like relaxing because maybe like this ocean, nothing happening, whereas other people there'd be thoughts and feelings, and then for yourself it'd just be nothing, just a calm.
My head's like, just like. Like a seashell.
There you were, calmly sitting down, having a sit down with you yesterday, and all you got was me banging on the toilet door. Yeah. Saying, "Are you done?" Yeah.
Can't take
trying
you
to slide your smartphone underneath to take photos.
Do you see what I have to put up with on a weekly basis, people? Unbelievable. These are my friends. Anyway,
when shall I tell a urination story? It's quite funny.
Oh, please do.
Back in the student halls when I first started going, we had like your own rooms and you only your own bathroom in your room. So like mine was down the hall from the communal kitchen where everyone was sitting during the evening, sort of drinking whatever. So every time I went to a pee, like they could hear it in there because of the pipe works, and basically everyone stopped and just listened and didn't talk. And they told me this after about 8 months. That every I looked at them, "Are you fucking weirdos?" That is really good.
where I am at work, me and my mate discovered in the early days of iPhones, you get this app that made dinosaur noises. Like just pressed on the picture of a dinosaur and it made a rah noise. So what he'd do is he'd pretend to be washing his hands in the sort of big toilets of my work, and I'd be in the cubicle. And then as soon as someone would come in, all you'd hear from the cubicle would be rah.
And once again, folks, we'd like to welcome you to the Bogcast.
There was one where at our place, like, there's one urine on two, like...
How many stories have you got, Dan?
No, I saw my mate at the urinal, so I went into behind the door, and I was sitting there going, oh, Jesus, Jane. And I came out, and he sort of like gave me like the side eye to check who it was, saw it was me, and started laughing. And then the fucking MD came out the other trap.
That'll teach you.
Yeah, classic.
Oh dear. Anyway, now we're on the last stretch. Who wants to go first with a recommendation?
I've got two. So shall I go first on one of them and last on the last
one?
Yeah, okay. Go on.
A bit of a quick one. First one up is, I've been meaning to talk about this for a while, Mean Girls Club, Pink Dawn, which is the bigger version of the Mean Girls comic series out of Nobrow, created by Ryan Heschke, 100 pages, hardcover book, colour interiors. Let's play the guessing game again. How much do you think this costs from Nobrow?
£3. $14.99.
Exactly. Well done.
Yeah,
very good. I'll read you the back. The lascivious ladies of the Mean Girls Club have been raising a riot around town, and the cops are onto them. Prepare for a mad dash of boozing, skull-busting, and general mid-century mayhem as they deliver a swift stiletto stab to the crotch of the patriarchy. This is done thoroughly with a big tongue-in-cheek. Imagine Betty Boop. Do you remember the Betty Boop cartoon?
Gotcha.
Not Betty Boop, because she's too busy to do, but Betty Boop was... And cross that with some sort of really outrageous sort of violent crime noir film, like schlocky film, and you're almost there. The original series came out in the 17x23 series, which was a more sort of comic series that they brought out a few years ago. They don't really do anymore, this is a continuation and a bit expansion of that story, and it's really good. I absolutely loved it. I've been waiting for this to come out for a while. It's done with that sort of retro cool, like bordering on the sort of burlesque cool thing, you know, the sort of low cut tops and stuff like that. But it's got the best language of any comic you will read. I dare you this year. A clam. Hey, well, my girls will make these donut holes sing. One of them shouts out at one point, great pork swords, which is just sort of this mad sort of hairy hatchet wounds. Someone shouts out.
Oh, my God.
They wear sort of tight skirts, and they got that sort of preened baby doll makeup, the odd eye patch and tattoo, and they all carry like shotguns or knives or bats. And one of them, even I think one of them carries a snake as a weapon. And they take on Mayor Shlomo is one of those sort of, he could easily appear in a Burt Reynolds movie as the corrupt mayor or sheriff of a town. He's got that sort of look about him. This sort of big, fat, horrible, sweaty person. The characters in it, the Mean Girls Club, are McQuaalude, Wendy, Wanda, Sweets, Blackie, and they're just sort of prone to sort of like extreme rudeness, sudden acts of violence. You know, they're always about thieving, always stealing dynamite or cars and all this sort of thing. But they're kind of like the good girls in this. I know they're the mean girls in the title, but they're the kind of the heroes of the story against the sort of corrupt establishment. At one point, somebody shouts out, "Holy fuck balls!" She kicked Wanda square in the sausage grinder. How cool is that?
That's a fucking great line.
It's really anarchic. It is well worth the money. It's been out for about a month now, I think, from Nobrow. Our friends, my particular friends, go to nobrow.net and get a copy. Ryan Heschke is an absolute talent. He's fucking daft as a brush, but he does some really, really interesting comics with a real sort of eye to style. You know, we're talking about the leaf inside the page has been a design. You know, you've got that sort of filler page, haven't you, almost before you reach the story. And this is like crisscross of bones with stilettos, bats, guns and knives as a sort of like wallpaper effect. Really, really nicely produced. All done in pink, black and grey. Really lovely. If you go to Ryan Heschke, ryanheschka.com, ryanheschka.com, you can find out more about the artist. Yeah, and at a cheap price too. That's my first one.
Nice. Dan, what have you got?
Again, this one was sent in a little while ago, but it was on a Kickstarter, which it's made its money, and I think it's available for sale now. And it's Adventures in Science by Dead Canary.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to have to pick a copy of this up because it's fantastic.
It's amazing.
It's
yeah.
really, really good. It's going to take me a little while to get through the credits, but here we go. Writing, it's an anthology of stories. So there's a couple of writers, and then every artist is different on each tale, but sometimes the writers do more than one comic. So the writers are Matt Fitch, C.S. Baker, Paul Clark Force, Mark Lewis, and some of the artists, well, it's fantastic. Shaky Kane, Crint Abel, John Eggs, Ellie Powell, Jason Burrows, Jeff Senior, Gibson Quarter, J. Francis Totti, Mark Stafford, Vincenzo Sensioni, Matt Fitch, Casper Wingard, and Greg Menzi. I'll read you the blurb for the book. Adventures in Science is a neon-soaked, darkly comic, technicolor graphic anthology featuring daring artwork from some of the most exciting artists in this or any other world. Each story is a self-contained what-if, a pulpy adventuristic delight of scientific dreaming, a sideways glance at what could be. Some stories are funny, some are serious, some are deep. All are guaranteed to entertain. And like it says on the tin, there's a selection of stories. I should have really counted, but there's a good dozen tales. Yeah. And they're kind of little snapshots, very kind of, some of them are quite cyberpunky, some are futuristic. There were some only like 3 or 4 pages long, but they got some. Every one of them is like on point and great.
So well made, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, they come. The art and every single one is absolutely fantastic. Right on them is so on point. It's really well done. They come up, bring up little ideas or little thoughts of philosophy, and it's explored in that tale. It's like this doesn't need any more than what you've done to it. It's really well done. There's a couple I'll point out. The art for Blood in Your Hands, the art by Casper Wingard, the words by Baker and Fitch, is fantastic. It's just he just gets better and better, that guy. I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And another two of the point out ones that really work for me is 14 Arms to Hold You, and the synopsis for that. It's the most terrifying weapon under the sea, and it's got an embrace that's fuel for nightmares. And imagine... I can't talk too much about spoiling it, but octopuses engineered as weapons, and they're like Pennywise out of
God, yeah.
So you sort of see your worst nightmare when dealing with them. And another great one, which is a Holiday of a Lifetime, where in the future people can go back in time and be like tourists in events. And this married couple go back to see the Titanic, and they're sort of like turning their noses up at everything as the ship's going down, like the poor service and what the food's like, etc. And they start regaling how they had better times and other sort of journeys back.
It's like Twilight Zone sort of in comic form.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I was going to sort of say some of them are quite tales and unexpected as well. I didn't mean not in a bad way,
yeah.
But like they've got this kind of real nice twist to them and a bit of a kick at the end. And there's another one, No Signal. It's what do you do to shut out the noise of constant communications grid? And if you go somewhere, so this the main protagonist is a young lady, and your brain is forever sort of tapped into social media, and you can't hide from messages or tweets at you or stuff like that. It's kind of like an episode,
isn't it?
Yeah. And this woman's done something horrific, and she 24/7 is just getting bombarded with horrible messages and tweets and what have you, the equivalent of, and then what she goes to kind of go through to get over that. I would highly recommend this book. It's fantastic. I'm going to get myself a copy.
Yeah,
You can check out the Dead Canary website, and you should be able to get it through there.
Great sci-fi sort of asks questions, doesn't it? Really,
exactly.
Yeah,
a lot of the time, and you can
it reflects what's going on, doesn't it?
Yeah,
sometimes.
And you can still do that with humor or horror or anything. But it's always the quality of the initial sort of concept that is the strongest. I mean, that's why a lot of the Black Mirror is so popular, because you just hear the concept and you think, well, of course, there's so much you could do with that.
Yeah.
And this is, yeah, if you like sort of Twilight Zone, Black Mirror, or just anything like that, I think this is just great stuff.
Right, really. Yeah.
Dead Canary, rarely. They don't put out bad books, do they?
I mean, the talent they've got in this is just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's all pro, isn't it? When you look at it, there's a lot of pro talent there, isn't there?
Yeah. And some of the names I've not heard of before are the ones that really shine, not taking it away from anyone else. But so I've never heard of this person before, and they're brilliant. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really, really accomplished. Really good book.
Yeah, nice. So be on the lookout for that, because they'll have it. They're at a lot of conventions, aren't they, normally, Dead Canary?
Yes.
Yeah. So. Yeah, keep running.
Oh, they'll be at Leamington, won't they? Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Mm. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Mm. My second recommendation for this week is one that I've been meaning to talk about for a little while. Keep it short and sharp, because there's so much for you people to check out on this. This is a webcomic called Multiplex, created by Gordon McAlpin. Sorry. Now, I think most of us here, and anyone who listens to this show, we're all movie fans, aren't we? We're big movie fans, and we like the cinema experience. So, and this is just, you know, if you like going to the cinema, this is just a webcomic for you. Now, the backstory is it's a lowbrow movie buff, Kurt, and a highbrow film snob, Jason, who basically they wage a never-ending battle against the terrible movies and even worse customers infesting their movie theater, the Multiplex 10 Cinema. And it's been described as like Clerks, you know, if you've got that. So it's like that set within a sort of like an American sort of cinema, and the people that work there and their relationships. And it's not just those two main characters. There are other great support characters as well. It ran from July 2005 through to April 2017. So this was going for quite some time. And it's during which, obviously, he was doing it. It was very much on point of the time. So the characters, they aged and they grew up in real time. And of course, the movie industry just dramatically changed over that time. As it says on the website, it experienced its most significant change since the adoption of sound film, the coming of digital cinema, and how that changed. So it bears that all. There's like an ongoing story, you know, they're like joke strips. Very much close to my heart, because a lot of it has that sort of pacing of... like Stalkerville was, you have those sort of weekly strips, and you know that some of them are just people who go to order a cinema ticket and the people just making jokes about them and stuff. But by doing that, he almost did the sort of thing that I would have dreamt that Stalkerville would have become, by doing these sort of things and running a longer sort of storyline going through it. So when you get to know characters and how they interact with each other, and just the ongoing, like, day-to-day process, it's like fantastic comedy. It's very satirical about certain... I mean, we'll remember like when Watchmen came out in the cinema, and that was a big thing, or the latest Star Wars, and he writes that into the comedy as well. The website itself has got loads of stuff, because like I said, it's got all the strips, but he's collected them up as like ebooks. You can get them in all sorts of formats. There's the printed books if you're in the States and you want to get these collections. I think there's three or four like proper big printed collections. There's bonus features. There's like an animated short that someone did, which is available on Vimeo. The actual strip itself, it's like a vector based sort of strip, which is also very close to my heart. Like web, like vector art, and how that made it sort of possible for him to do that sort of stuff. In fact, in one of his books, he's got a sort of foreword where he talks about like how, like doing vector, you know, he draws normally as well, but by doing like getting used to the vector art and doing that on a daily basis, and how that made it easier for him to do this sort of book. Because to churn out, to do a webcomic, I mean, how long have you been going, Dan? You've been going since...
Christ, that's 7-8 years.
Yeah, similar, you know, it's a lot of work, isn't it, to do...
It's hard, yeah.
It's hard, and you know, and it's all finished now, because it finished in April. So you can go on to sort of multiplexcomic.com, and there's a section, you got home, you got a bit for new readers. So if you're new to it, you know exactly where to start. It does sort of recommend, because of the nature of the strip, start at the beginning, you know, and you'll get into the rhythm of it, and then you've just got loads to Go on, you've got a bit about the sort of comic, you know, it's broken down into sort of issues as well and books. There's a bit about cast, there's bonus features, there's a store, there's an about section. In terms of like web comics, this is a nicely put together sort of website. Very, very simple. It's not flash and bang. It's very simple, tells you what you need to know. But the comic itself is just hilarious. Plus, when he does the collections, he puts like annotations on the bottom of the pages because he's looking back at, you know, he'll say, oh, when I did this years ago, you know, if I was a George Lucas, I'd go back and redo all of this because I didn't like the art I did before. You know, he's not doing that. He's not, but he's making notes on his old strips, which are fascinating because you laugh at the strip and then you look afterwards and you think, oh, this was something that was in the recycle bin. This was something that was never supposed to be on, but he puts them in the collections, which I think is fascinating as well. So if you're a fan of those sort of Clerks style comics, which can work if done well, I think, and this one definitely.
Yeah, I like the Jim Marfood.
Yeah, yeah.
Series, yeah, and all that sort of thing. Yeah, I think it's good.
Yeah,
yeah. It's a little bit of its time, but yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, certainly, if you're a movie fan as well, you'll get a laugh out of there's some biting satire about the film, the Michael Bay film The Island, in some of the earlier strips. Do you remember that film?
I forgot that had happened, and then I saw it again recently.
Yeah.
I read the book that was based very loosely based on.
Okay,
it was like, fuck me, that book is just, it's a really good book compared to the film.
I didn't realize that was a book. Okay.
No,
I thought it was like someone had gone, let's do Logan's Run, but we can't get the money for it to buy it.
Yeah.
Let's do a movie a bit like Logan's Run, but it was there's an element of that into it as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
In the book, there's like an island of kind of like the same thing, but they have like amputations, and so like when someone has an arm, so everyone on there's like horribly misfigured because they've been surgically altered all this time.
What you're saying is, Dan,
it's like Swindon.
So what you're saying is, Dan, is read the book, ignore the film.
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty
okay.
Much. You can say that about a lot of films, but definitely, folks. This one I've been working with. There's so much of it to read that I've just been occasionally just pop on and just, you know, just read a strip here and there. And Greg and Gordon very kindly sent through a collection of a few strips. Multiplexcomic.com. Check it out, and it's well worth your time. So there you go.
Nice.
That's my one.
Cool.
Okay, Tony, take us home.
Yeah, I've got a very short one. It's by Kingbone Press. It's Kingdom of Skulls by Ray Wegner. I think I'm on the distribution list for these guys. I think they're an American company, actually. It's very different, this. It's black and white, 40 pages, very sort of stylized, basic black and white images, very heavy on the inks. And I think part of it was previously serialized in the Kingbone Presents series. They've obviously had an anthology. It opens on a very sort of iconic image of a skull-headed king sitting on an old throne, and it's basically along the lines of that he's near the end of his life, and he's facing a sort of revolution at the gates, and he's contemplating and reflecting on his past, on what he's going to do in the future, and his mind goes back to the very first king who sort of founded this sort of fantasy land that he lives in, and how this king fought a giant beast to start the city. And then he goes through a little list of all the kings that followed and the leaders that followed and how different they all were, and then he gets his sword on and his armor and he heads out to do battle. But it's a really interesting style. It's not really like anything I've seen before. It's there's very few human faces in it, put it that way. There's very few actual faces you'd recognize as, like, you know, anything. There's a lot of warriors who've got sort of steel helmets on, sort of stylized steel helmets. But they remind me a bit like of Akroya in Micronauts. That's, some of those helmets are a bit like that. They're all slightly different, but they're sort of, you know, winged or spiked or, you know, sort of thing. And it is a tiny bit amateurish. I would say the lettering really needs some help. It does look like someone's just lettered it from hand without really understanding the concept of lettering. And the boxes that surround the lettering are a little bit rough and don't quite fit and stuff like that. But it genuinely has something. It's got an examination of a psyche of someone, you know, like King Lear or someone like that, where they examine the sort of the king in the later life and stuff. It's interesting. I have to say, I probably, if you can get it cheaply, have a look at it. And it's the first of a series. Yeah, it's got something. It's a little bit Mignola-esque with the art. I'm going to put it that way. Okay. It's a bit like a sort of slightly amateurish Mignola, which ain't a bad thing, to be fair. You know, it's only a small press company, and they will learn, I'm sure. But yeah, it's nice to be in the ground level with them. If you go to kingbonepress.com or at kingbonepress on Twitter, I'm sure you can see some examples of it. They're beginning to get a little stable of books that are coming out. All of them are really interesting, really experimental, a bit like this one. And they're sort of drilling down and focusing in on a subject, which I really like it when people do that. And this is just basically the psyche of this elderly ruler of a strange sort of fantastical land and how he's coping with, you know, honor and the fact he was once a great warrior and he's not now. And the cover is once again, weirdly, actually pink, black and white, and it's got this sort of character in a long sort of dark gown, and his hand is sticking out from the gown, and it's covered in blood that's dripping off his hand. So it's a very stylized cover and well exacted. It would certainly ping off a shelf at you. Yeah, that's my last one. Interesting stuff.
Nice. Yeah. Plenty of comics for you this week, folks.
Yeah.
I've got two very quick ones to add to your pile as well. First off, talk a couple of weeks ago, I think, we mentioned Spider King by IDW Press.
Uh-huh.
Fantastic book. Love it. Issue 2 has come out now, so you can get both issues of it. Well worth it. Vikings versus Aliens. What more can be said?
Yeah, good.
Baby Teeth number 9 is out, and if you're not reading Baby Teeth, something's wrong with you. So there you go. there you go. So many comics for you to check out this week, and it was a fun one. Nice.
Yeah, system. Good. Yeah. We went a bit longer than we expected on that.
Yeah,
one,
yeah. We thought it was a short one this week, but we just start rambling after a while, and we certainly hope you enjoy it because we enjoy making it.
Yeah.
So yes, let us know what you thought of this episode, folks. There's several different ways you can get in touch with us to tell us what you think. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if there's any events or if you've got any small press events coming up, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
Yeah, please let us know.
We'll mention them in the shout outs because we're getting to that point in the season where there's going to be an awful lot more of these sort of events, I think, happening.
Yeah, getting there, aren't we? Definitely. Yeah.
Certainly around Small Press Day, which we'll probably talk about in the future. So like us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod, where we'll announce future guests and questions and on all kinds. It's all good fun. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And join the group Awesome Comics Talk, because it's a fantastic place to go. Loads of people talking about comics and making comics. Dan's had a bit of an idea, haven't you, Dan?
Yes, I have.
I saw this
on a forum board. Essentially, someone's got the Avengers Infinity War poster, and they made it up into a grid, some squares. So what you do, I post up the picture, you'll say, right, I'm going to draw grid A1, and then you draw that square in your style. You can put your characters in it or do whatever you want with it, and then you give it back to me, and then everyone does a square, and before you know it, you filled it up, and then I'll put all the squares together, and we'll have our own little picture.
Oh, nice. Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, do pretty much what you want with that square, as long as it kind of vaguely resembles the shapes in it, so that they can be brought together without it being an absolute mental mess.
I'll
post it up this week, and then we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, so keep your eye on the Awesome Comics Talk page on Facebook as the week goes on, because you never know what will happen.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review. We haven't had one for a little bit. We've had some lovely ones, and we're very proud and pleased that you're all enjoying the show. It's fantastic, because that's why we make it. It helps get the word out. Also, if you've heard us on the Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Beetroot.
I knew it was going to be that. But wherever you heard us, we truly, truly appreciate it. Spread the word, and we'll continue spreading the word about Small Press Comics and beyond. So there you go, another one in the bag. It's been a fun one. Stay tuned for more fantastic guests coming up. We're all booked up for the next couple of months, so
we've got is it next week we've got a very interesting one?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, people will be very excited
to remind me of that
after
the show.
So lots of excitement to come, as always is with this show. So thank you for listening. Where can people find us online, etc.? I almost missed it. I almost did the sign off straight away. But where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Yeah, Ezo, yes, E-Z-O-H-Y-Z. If you go to neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk, you can see I have a friend of mine, Ed Traquino. If you don't know who Ed is, we've mentioned him a few times on the show in the past. He did us the episode 100, big piece of art of us all sitting around a table interviewing Kirby. That was really nice.
That was awesome.
But he's, as well as being a comics creator with me, he drew some of my nonsense many years ago. He's a creator in his own right and now living in New York. But he's also a storyboard artist on the Marvel movies and was working and has worked on Black Panther. He has done us a print for the anthology of it's basically Soho Red from Cockney Kung Fu dancing with Sid James in a 1970s disco, and it is fucking outstanding.
Yeah, it is amazing.
You can see like a small version of it on the blog, but we've done a print of it to help pay for the anthology. So if you head over there, the details are all on there, and you can also head it to Ed Traquino, EdTraquino, edtraquino.com, and look at some of his other works, some just fantastic stuff on the shows and the movies he's worked on as a storyboard artist. You would not believe, and it's really kind of him to do this, but I recommend you have a look at his art as well. And if you want a copy, it's £6 plus postage and packing. Just let us know, and there's the addresses and all that sort of thing are on the blog, so have a look. There you go, that's me.
There you go. What about you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. I've just finished issue 14, so there's going to be a little bit of a hiatus for a couple of months while I get the shit ready for the next one.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice. You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And if you want to buy a copy of Ish Awesome Comics issue 1, where can they get it from, guys? Because we normally pimp that every week, but we haven't pimped it this week.
Yeah, didn't do so well this week. Yeah, pimping everyone else's stuff.
Yeah.
If you look for Awesome Comics Pod on the Big Cartel, you can buy both digital for £1 and the print copy for £3 while stocks last.
Yeah. Yeah, get on board because issue 2 is going to kick your face off. There you go.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening, folks. And from Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. Support small press, read loads of comics. And as always, what do they do, lads?
Oh, don't make me do it again.
They gotta stay awesome.
Thanks, Dan. See
you. See you later.
See you, folks.
See ya.
And welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 142, and I'm Vince. Oh, fuck it.
Keep going.
Keep going.
No, I'm doing that again. No, Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode... Oh, fuck.
Jesus.